Welcome to the Dildorks, dorky discourse on sex, dating, and masturbating. My name is Kate Sloan. I'm a sex journalist, a sex blogger, and as soon as my mandated quarantine was over, I definitely got some texts from my friend with benefits who I haven't seen since before the pandemic, so he knows what's up. Nature is healing. Who are you, friend?
I'm Bex. I'm a sex educator and porn maker, and like most of my casual sex that has happened and is going to happen soonish is through porn things, but it's fairly adjacent.
Yeah, that's just casual sex, but you film it.
Exactly. And we'll talk about that a little bit later too, I think, because it is fairly related, especially the way we're doing it now. But this week we're talking about casual sex, because, and one night stands and hookups and all of those like slightly more ephemeral sexual relationships that we have, because I feel like that is a thing that may have been missing from a lot of our lives over the past 18 months or so, and is going to be reappearing, for those of us who enjoyed it in the past, or might be something that, folks are craving for the first time. So I thought it would be fun to talk about it.
Yeah. And I do think it's going to be pretty radically different post-pandemic than it was before, if just because it seems like everybody I talk to is really worried about their atrophied social skills, as we've talked about before here. And I always found it difficult to navigate the social interactions around casual sex, like kind of to get to the good sex part. There's so much that you have to do. And I feel like it's going to be even harder for folks now who already struggled with it pre-pandemic, which is kind of rough. But maybe we'll be able to create, you know, new conventions as a result of that.
Yeah, I'm kind of two minds of it, because as someone who, like, I have a hell of a lot of social anxiety. I have found it spiking after the pandemic. But I actually find it really comforting to know that neurotypical people are out there being like, I feel weird in public. How do I talk to people? What do I do? And I'm like, yeah, welcome to my comfort zone.
Yes.
Because I feel like this all the time. And yeah, it's heightened. But like, I am going into all of these situations with the context that everyone else feels probably at least almost as awkward as I do. So it's a lot easier for me to do what I normally do when I'm feeling anxious and awkward, which is lean into it and like be really explicit about it and being like, God, I don't know how to ask this, but I'm feeling like, you know, I want to know blah, blah, blah. Right. And just say like, God, I haven't talked to people in so long. I feel like I don't even know how to flirt anymore, but you're like really cute. So I'm trying to make a good impression.
Yeah.
Which is absolutely a thing I've said in the last week. Like,
I totally agree. And I think a lot of people tend to lean on meta communication and, you know, over communication, if you want to call it that, when they're feeling a little awkward. And I think that that's a good impulse, and it's one that will probably work pretty well post pandemic, because as you said, we're all kind of feeling that way.
And I think being the one to just call out the awkward, literally just be like, God, this is, I am feeling, and there is a difference between like, wow, I'm feeling really anxious and awkward right now, and just standing in front of someone being like, God, this is awkward. Like, those have different tones.
Hate that. Yeah.
But you can like kind of take ownership and being like, God, I'm feeling so weird in these social situations. If I'm seeming kind of off, that's probably why. Because the other person is just going to laugh, and you've already broken that kind of bubble of like, no, this isn't a place where you're expected to know how to socialize the way you used to. I'm aware things are weird. Let's just like work through it the best we can.
Yep. Yep.
So I know we've talked about this quite a bit on the show, but you are a person who has enjoyed casual sex and like hookups in the past, but that is not so much a current part of your life, and it's not something you super enjoy right now. Or at least with like one night stands and that sort of thing. I'm curious if you remember, or if there are any things that you did enjoy about them, like what was fun about it at the time when you were doing it?
Well, you know how there's sort of a maxim that things that are challenging are sometimes the most rewarding or the biggest source of personal growth or the most exciting things that you do. And I have not always found that to be true, but in the realm of casual sex, like if I managed to pull off an actually good hookup that felt mutually beneficial, mutually pleasurable, and not at all exploitative or super, super awkward. I mean, that was a powerful rush. That was like a great feeling for me. It was always like really a confidence booster, and it made me feel like, wow, anything is possible. I could do big stuff in my career. I could you know, make new friends. I could be bold and go on these adventures because I had managed to do that in this casual sex scenario. Mm-hmm. And the flip side of that is, like, there definitely were a lot of times when just the sex was bad, the chemistry was bad, the conversation was bad. And I do think sometimes I am too harsh when I'm sort of joking around about my past hookup experiences and, like, blaming it on the other person half-jokingly. Mm-hmm. Because, like, often it was also my own issues. I mean, I definitely think mm-hmm. I would have had a better time with hookups and one-night stands if I had been more communicative about, like, what I wanted, what I needed, what I expected. Mm-hmm. And also, like, just held my dates to a higher standard in terms of, like, don't just go out with someone who says that you're cute because it gives you a little confidence rush. Like, do you actually have any interest in them? Do they seem mm-hmm. like they'd be a fun person for you to hang out with and hook up with? I think I was very often guided by my own insecurity and anxiety rather than my own sense of, like, adventure and self-actualization and confidence. And so, I don't know, maybe it would be different now if I was to try to dive back into it.
Yeah, I definitely, I mean, I feel like what you were describing is kind of reminiscent of the way I've experienced casual sex in the past. And I, as a person who I am a lot more interested in doing it now, particularly, I think, because I feel so much more comfortable in my gender, so it feels so much more accessible. Right. Whereas, like, casual sex in the past is like, God, are you, like, I have to at least figure out if you understand my gender and I'm seeing me the way I want you to, and I have to be anxious about it the whole time anyway, because mm-hmm. I don't really know you. And that is less an insecurity for me right now. So, like, it feels more accessible. And I do think, I don't know, I feel like I am going into it way more prepared because of the ways, because of what you were saying. I feel so much more comfortable speaking about, like, my expectations and my desires. And I also feel a lot more comfortable, like, just saying no and letting them down, but also just accepting that, oh, that means I don't get a date tonight, I don't get casual sex tonight, I don't get the validation, whatever. Like, yeah. I'm much more, it is not a thing that I am chasing after that I need to, like, that is going to give me some sort of validation or whatever. It is like, oh, that would be fun. But the minute it stops sounding fun, it's like, well, I don't want to do that anymore. Which is not always the relationship I've had to it.
Yeah, I think, like, a lot of the themes that what you're saying are reminding me of is, like, scarcity mm-hmm. versus abundance. And, I mean, I notice this as a freelancer because I do it in my workspace, too, is, like, when I'm feeling more insecure and anxious just in general, mm-hmm. I will make worse decisions work-wise. Because I'll be like, I can't afford to say no to these things because mm-hmm. no other better opportunity will come along. So I have to say yes to these things that I know are going to make me unhappy and don't pay enough or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I definitely used to do the same thing when it came to casual sex, where it was like I said, like, maybe I don't find this person's profile that interesting, but they're expressing a lot of interest in me and I'm really insecure. So, like, maybe I should jump on that. Who knows mm-hmm. if another person is going to come along and express desire for me. And I think what I've learned is, like, even for people who are unconventionally attractive and who do have a hard time attracting potential suitors, which I know that, like, there are many people who experience that for many different reasons, like, mm-hmm. that doesn't necessarily mean you're doomed. And also, like, your scarcity attitude is, like, not necessarily the most empowering thing. And I mean, I know that this is coming from a privileged place and it's really complicated, but mm-hmm. I just find that I make such better choices when I'm coming from a place of, like, huh, like, there will be more opportunities like this, so let me look at this specific opportunity and go, does this make sense for me now? Does this sound fun? Mm-hmm. Does this sound fun both, like, on an overall level and also at this moment, which are sometimes mm-hmm. two different things?
Do I like the idea of this, or do I like actually going and practically doing this? Do I want to be the right kind of person who does these things, or do I want to get out of my house and go do this thing? Those are all exactly different things.
And I think in the queer community and the kinky community, the sex positive community, there can be a lot of unspoken pressure of, like, you're only mm-hmm. cool or socially successful or whatever if you're having a lot of casual sex and you're able to do it without complications or feelings or problems. And it's just not accurate to most people's experience. And also, I mean, who cares? This isn't high school. You don't have to live up to some expectation to be the empowered slut who you see in your head if that's just not you and not what makes you happy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I totally agree. And what we were talking about with these, like, scarcity and abundance mindset really resonated with me, because not only am I making better choices, but I think I am showing up better for the relationships that I am in, whether they are one-night stands or longer-term things. And I mean, part of that, like you were saying, it's not easy, right? Part of that comes from I have spent 18 months in my house with fairly limited relationships, right? Yep. And survived it. There were a lot of parts that I didn't love. But like, I'm like, I have a new understanding of how I can keep myself company. And how I can, there are things I will entertain myself with. I no longer need to fill my life with busyness as a like coping strategy in other people, which is a thing I know I fall back on. So I'm able to show up for relationships and I feel a lot more comfortable saying a thing that I think might piss someone off or might make them not like me. Because if it's true and that pisses them off, well, they're not a person I want to be spending time with. And I feel much more confident saying that and saying, if you are a person who is going to judge me poorly for my boundaries, for the things I believe in, for the things I'm passionate about, for the things that I think make me charming and funny, then that's not a person I want to super spend time with. So I am much more comfortable being very forward and explicit and not tamping any of that stuff down because I want the people who will self-select into that. So it's just another filter, you know?
Absolutely. And I think that's so important for so many different types of people. And it's reminding me of a time like 4 or 5 years ago when I was texting with this guy from OkCupid who I wanted to go out with. And he was starting to get a little sexy. And I, at the time, and even probably still now, have a boundary that I don't really like to sext with people before I've at least met them in person. It's probably a demisexual thing. I just can't really... I just don't really care enough to be able to get turned on by it. And also it kind of makes me feel pressured or obligated when we do meet up in person to like get sexy immediately when I don't even know if I'm going to be attracted to them. So I expressed that boundary to this guy who I've been having this great non-sexual conversation with. And he fully ghosted me. And yeah, and I was really, really bummed about it. And I remember spending days being like, what did I do wrong? How can I fix this for next time? Does this mean I'm a failure? Does this mean I'm unlovable? I mean, I totally spiraled on it. And now I see, I mean, it's very likely that the no sexting thing is why he ghosted me. And it's very likely that that's fully about him and that he wanted to sext with somebody at that moment. Yeah. And we didn't know each other. So it's not like he knew me even well enough to be rejecting me on any other basis, really. So nowadays, I really think I would just be like, well, I guess I learned that this person isn't a good match for me. Cool. Keep swiping.
Right. I fully understand the emotional response to that because I've definitely been in that place. And at the same time, like practically what you've learned is that that is a person who wanted sext and doesn't communicate well around not getting things they want.
Yep.
Neither of which are traits that you wanted in a relationship at that point. So like... That seems like a win. However, it doesn't feel like one.
Exactly. Yep. That's the hard part.
One of the things you mentioned there that I wanted to touch on is you identify as demi. And I'm curious if that just inherently means that like casual sex, hookups, one night stands are just not a part of your sex life because of your orientation.
Yeah, so brief demisexuality 101 for those who don't know. It's an identity on the asexual spectrum, and it basically means that I don't experience sexual attraction to people until and unless I have an emotional connection to them, which, like, different demi people define emotional connection differently. For me, I find two or three dates usually will do it. I just have to feel like I know somebody's brain enough to just, you know, have a sense of who they are as a person and their integrity and their interests and... you know, just their vibe. And it's not the kind of thing I can pick up in a few texts, and it's not the kind of thing I can even necessarily pick up on one date. And I think that this is the reason that a lot of my past casual sex experiences were not super successful was that I didn't realize I was demi at the time. And so I'd be like, why is this sex bad and why am I not into the sex, even though I decided to go on this date because I wanted to have sex? And the reason was because I hadn't given myself enough time to be sexually attracted to these people. And like, there are many reasons to have sex, not all of which are related to sexual attraction. I really believe that's true and that's valid. But at the same time, it would have helped me a lot to know, like, no, like, the reason it's bad is that you're not attracted to them. And that's okay. That's, like, just part of who you are and how you're wired. And you can ask for more time to deal with that. So nowadays, like, I mean, obviously, with the pandemic, it has been a while since I've, like, pursued this at all. But I don't tend to throw demisexual into my bio or anything because most people don't know what it means. And also, I think most people who will Google it to see what it means may not get an accurate picture of like how it manifests for me specifically. Mm-hmm. So what I'll usually do instead is say in my profile, like, I'm more into dates than hookups, which mm-hmm. does not necessarily mean dating in the sense of like being in a relationship. I just, mm-hmm. you know, I like to go on dates. I like to talk to people. And then I'll also say like, I like to get to know people before becoming mm-hmm. sexual with them. And I like that because it's non-judgmental mm-hmm. of both sides of that equation. And people who are not into that will skip right over me. And people who are into that will be like, oh, that's so refreshing to see someone expressing that. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so I do think that casual sex is like possible for me. I think probably the better manifestation of it for me would be more of an ongoing thing, which is why I've had the same mm-hmm. friend with benefits for like 4 years now. Like mm-hmm. that's pretty ideal for me. And also, you know, the type of casual dating where maybe you go on 3 to 5 dates with someone, hook up a few times, and then kind of decide it's not, you know, mm-hmm. something you want to pursue long term and mutually move on. I mean, that's always been pretty decent for me as well, I think.
Yeah, I think one of the things that stood out for me is that you described yourself as needing this like intimate and emotional connection with your partners, but not necessarily romantic.
Yeah.
Like that emotional connection, I've heard you talk about after, you know, spending a couple hours of really intense conversation with someone, feeling that kind of bond, right? Mm-hmm. Or, you know, this could maybe not necessarily for you, but, you know, a friend of a friend within your social circle that like, you know, and fairly trust and like see at parties or things, but is not like a person you are capital D dating.
Right.
Like there is versions of casual sex, but I think for most demi people I know, it tends to not look like one night stands with, you know, anonymous partners and that sort of thing.
Yeah. Cause it's sort of like, why would I be doing that? I mean, again, it comes back to the sort of like very internalized perception that casual sex and having a lot of sex is inherently good in some way. Mm-hmm. And whenever I notice myself making that logical assumption, I have to kind of back up and go, wait, why do I think that? Because mm-hmm. if it's not something I want, why is it inherently good for me? And it's not, is the answer. And yeah, I think that like there's especially a perception that like the cool way to do casual sex, like the chill, cool way to do mm-hmm. casual sex is like to not involve feelings or emotional connection or emotional like respect of any kind. Mm-hmm. And as you said, you can totally have those things without there being romance. I don't even necessarily want another romantic connection of any kind right now. I'm kind of tapped out on that mm-hmm. and don't really need or want it. I wouldn't be mad if like some kind of romantic leaning flirting were to happen, but like it's not my main goal, and mm-hmm. it's still really possible for me to be sexually attracted to someone without that.
Yeah, for sure. I think having sex with someone is fairly inherently vulnerable and intimate, right? Mm-hmm. And I think you want to at least be able to feel comfortable inhabiting that space with this person, have at least a little bit of a connection. And even if you are a person who really enjoys anonymous sex, I think you can still treat your partners with that kind of courtesy and like assume that level of comfort together to some degree. Mm-hmm. I don't know. That got away from me.
No. Well, one more thing I'll say about demis having mm-hmm. hookups is you might have to kind of mentally reorient how you are thinking about sex mm-hmm. in order to enjoy the sex you're having. So if I were to do it now, I think I would be much more intentional about if I had planned a date that I thought was probably going to be a one night stand, I would think like, well, what is my intention with this? What am I trying mm-hmm. to get out of it? What do I hope will happen? And if you can define that for yourself, I mean, for me, it wouldn't necessarily even be great sex. Like it might be like, I want to get to know a new person. I want to have an interesting conversation. I want to mm-hmm. have an adventure that is a story I can tell. Or it might be, I want to have an orgasm with the help of someone who I've just met, who I've just instructed on how to give me one, or, mm-hmm. You know, there's any number of things. But I think when I went in with sort of a vague and undefined assumption about what I wanted, I would often end up disappointed because it didn't look the way hookups kind of do in like popular culture. Mm-hmm. And it went unexamined that like those goals are not my goals.
Mm-hmm. So that actually kind of brings me to the next thing I wanted to talk about. Once you've kind of done that introspection and done that work and figured out what it is you're hoping to get out of this, what your goals are, how you kind of want this to look, how do you go about negotiating that with someone you're picking up?
I think it is vastly different in kind of the quote unquote straight dating scene, mm-hmm. which is where most of my hookups have happened, because I have just found it's a lot easier to find cis men to hook up with. Like, they're just very prevalent. And
they're just everywhere, and their dicks are out. They're just, I don't know.
Yeah, and I think honestly, there's something about my particular insecurities that makes me pursue cis men more often. I mean, part of it is I am more often attracted to them than, mm-hmm. like, say, women. But they are kind of an easy get. And I think that that's kind of appealing to the insecure side of me, where it's like, oh, but if I ask this, like, really pretty butch person to go on a date with me, like, what if they say no? And what if that means that I'm a bad queer? I don't know. There's, like, all this extra, mm-hmm. like, anxiety associated with it. Mm-hmm. But in straight dating culture... Sorry, very rambly. I have a lot to say about this. There's just not as much of a culture around communicating about sex, because it's assumed that sex will go a certain way. And if you do communicate about it, sometimes people think that you're weird. Mm-hmm. But I think this is where it behooves you to just be dorkily over communicative, like really upfront, to scare away the people who aren't into that, as we've been saying. Because there are straight cis men who are open to that and probably would even find it refreshing, honestly, because a lot of straight cis men have anxieties about, like, I don't want to, you know, unintentionally push people's boundaries or unintentionally assault people or whatever. So I think some of them do, you know, appreciate very, very intense clarity. I've often done it in a way that comes across as, like, forward in kind of a sexy, confident way, but is actually just, like, here's the type of sex that I'm looking for tonight. Are you able or willing to provide that? Are you into that? And I think that so few women who date men are upfront like that, that it sometimes really catches them off guard and sometimes even kind of, like, turns them on and makes them like, huh, I'm into that. That's very confident of you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, I mean... It's been a minute since I've been hooking up in, like, straight communities. A lot of my experience now is more with other queer folks. And I think a lot of mine is also, I do a lot of my cruising more in person at events and things. If I'm going to hook up with someone, like, that night, it's because I found them at an event or a party or whatever. So I do think I am, like, I'm, like, thinking back on my own experience. I am less prone to negotiate in advance if I'm like, hey, this is definitely going to be a casual thing or not. But I do think that is – no, that's not true. Now I'm thinking – sorry, again, I'm just rambling. Okay.
That's okay. It's a complicated topic.
Yeah. I think what I tend to do when I'm playing with folks in person is I make sure that they are aware about me, my relationship status, the way I approach relationships, right? Generally, if I'm doing a hookup with someone that I am cruising at, like an event, I will have a couple of conversations with them, because I'm not the kind of person that likes to, like, lock eyes across the room and fuck. Like, I've done it once or twice. It's generally not great sex in my experience, because that's just – it's for getting off on the anonymity, and that's not my thing. But so generally I'll have, like, at least one or two conversations over a drink or whatever, and that's generally enough time to, like, mention my partner or mention my relationship style or, like, make sure this person has some idea of, like, how I relate in the world. And then generally I wind up having any sort of, like, big negotiation around, like, I don't know, I think there is less expectation too about, like, something being more than just a hookup in my experience, particularly because I tend to cruise at events. Like, the expectation tends to start at hookup rather than assuming into dating in the way I think sometimes straight relationships can be like, okay, well, we did the date and the sex and we just round up and we keep doing this, right? Lather, rinse, repeat forever. Is that how this works?
Well, that's such a good point, because you were right that, like, there, I do feel like there's more ambiguity in the kind of straight dating culture about that, in part because we pit the genders against each other in such a way that we frame it, the conversation culturally is framed as women want relationships, men want sex, that's just a reality of how it is, and that's what we have to navigate, which of course is hugely oversimplified. But I do think that it leads to this dynamic where sometimes men who do only want sex will either lie about that or just not say that at all, because they assume that they'll be rejected if they make that clear, or perceived as like skeezy or whatever, which is like valid. It's quite possible that they would be assumed to be those things. But this was what led to a ton of misery for me when I was dating, because I was using Tinder and OkCupid, which are both platforms that like allow for hookups as well as relationships to form. And I was not stating what I wanted, which was ideally an ongoing thing, whether it be a romantic relationship or an ongoing casual fuck type of thing. And then I would get really disappointed when after one fuck, I wouldn't get texted back. Or asked out again, because I'd be like, well, that must have meant that it was bad. And it doesn't actually necessarily mean that. It might just mean that those people are just out for one-night stands, which is fine, and that's their prerogative. But the mismatch in expectations and the lack of communication about it made me so miserable. And that's something that I hope I would be better at if I was to dive back into this world.
Yeah, and I think that, like, not getting a text back the next day is another, like, side effect of because they assume that is the only way for it to be a one-night stand, right? You can't be, if you are nice to this person afterwards, well, then they will assume relationship and then it will keep building or whatever. When in my experience with like queer one-night stands or queer hookups, I have sensed like, you know, a text the next morning or whatever, and we exchange a few things and we're like, great, that was nice. And maybe we see each other at another event or maybe we don't, right? But it does feel to me, I think, a little more like, in my experience with other queer folks, sex is less tied to an assumption of a relationship. Like, it just is a thing you can enjoy with people. And like, I don't know, we'll have sex and wake up the next morning and be like, yeah, still friends and great, great, cool, yeah, like whatever. Without the assumption of like, oh God, what does this mean? Which can certainly be true, but.
And part of that, too, is that a lot of people will mix up sexual feelings with romantic feelings because they actually can be hard to sort of pry apart if you're not used to doing that mentally, or if you're used to those two things being always paired together. Or even if you have these kind of cultural assumptions about yourself, like a lot of women, I think, will sort of mentally hide from themselves the fact that, or deny to themselves the fact that they want sex without romance, because it's something that they've been told is wrong or slutty or immoral or just not what women do. And so there can be a certain amount of like, oh, that person gave me an amazing orgasm. That means that I have a crush on them and have to want to date them. And like, I don't know. Think about that. Do you actually want to date them? Maybe not.
Think about that when not in the same room as them and having wait for like the half-life of their hormones to get out of your system and all that.
Exactly.
All right. I have one more question that was just an interesting one for me, and I'm curious if you have an answer to this, and then we'll move over to listener questions. But we've talked about this a lot. Obviously, there are a lot of activities that we feel comfortable doing with, like, established partners, and, like, that is a, like, 201, 301 level of our relationship. Like, we can get to exploring those. Are there any activities that are, like, more fun or particularly fun with like a hookup or a casual partner?
Yeah, I mean, one thing that I have learned is that it can be really fun if you are hooking up with a vanilla person who is nonetheless open-minded to kink, to take them on that journey and introduce them to a kink technique. There are definitely some vanilla people who are deeply uncomfortable with this or feel awkward about it, and that's fine. They don't have to do it. But I have encountered situations where, like, maybe I'm on a date with a vanilla person and they find out that I'm into spanking, and they express a little bit of, if not curiosity about that, then at least like, oh, well, if you're into that, I'd love to do that to you. And I always kind of love giving very specific instructions, because it's fun. It's like I'm educating them, and maybe they'll take these skills, you know, into another hookup or another relationship. Or maybe not. But in any case, it's a fun adventure. And I can be very specific, having done a lot of kink in my life and learned a lot about what I like. I can give someone an implement and I can say, hit me in this area at this strength out of 10. And I'll tell you after each hit what strength out of 10 it was so that you can adjust. And I'll give a little bit of like critique. And it's really fun. I mean, obviously, I still have a lot of spanking going on in my relationship, too. Mm-hmm. But it is a different vibe because in my relationship, often my partner is making choices about how to do stuff to me based on what they have learned from experience. Whereas mm-hmm. it's very fun in a way to ask for very specifically what you want. Like I remember hooking up with a friend of mine and she had never slapped someone's face before mm-hmm. in a kinky way or at all. And I was like, oh, let me tell you the right way to do it. Like, here's the place on the face to hit and here's what to not hit. And, mm-hmm. you know, I talked her through technique and it was so fun. And it was also hot because it's like, wow, like you've really never done this before. And I'm just bringing you into a new world. It's really just a different emotion.
Yeah, I mean, I love that. And it plays into so much for me because, like, on the one hand, we're both educators for a reason. Like, we enjoy educating people. And there's so often in my dating life that I have to, like, talk to vanilla people and be like, no, I teach for a living. I'm not here to teach you all the way through, like, kink one, like, no. But if I'm with someone at an event that's like real cute and I'm having a real good time with them, and then I find out that they're vanilla but like kind of want to try this one thing, like that's fun. Watching yeah. someone who I trust to like be with me and learn and like be paying attention and thinking critically and like getting to watch their eyes light up as something clicks, like that's so satisfying. And there's those competency feelings there too, because like we both do this and we're both good at this. We've been doing this a minute. And like yeah. competency is fun to watch other people do, but there is also a particular thrill when you're in the middle of doing a thing that you know you're good at and you're like watching yourself be good at it. Mm-hmm. Like, that's very fun, but very different from the kind of subspace you can get with your partner who doesn't need to be told how to hit you.
Yes. And this is also reminding me, I'm going to go on a little bit of a tangent.
Oh, do it.
I like talking to you about this stuff. Yeah. I was reading an article the other day. Someone had written a blog post, and she was a cis woman who sleeps with cis men. Mm-hmm. And she was saying that she almost never gets off from intercourse. And which is like pretty normal right. without clitoral stimulation. It doesn't really tend to happen that often. Mm-hmm. And she was thinking about how when a man is fucking her, he's like adjusting his angle or his depth or whatever to get himself off essentially mm-hmm. with her body. And mm-hmm. she had this epiphany where
I know
was
she
like,
didn't mean that in a hot way, but God, anyway, go on.
I know. I agree. I fully agree. It is kinky and also true.
I just needed a moment for that. Anyway.
I know. I agree. But she had this epiphany where she was like, I never do that in terms of like adjusting the way I'm fucking someone so that it feels best for me so that I can get off. And so what she started to do was like get on top of her partner, hold the vibrator, grind against his dick in a way that felt good for her, even if it wasn't necessarily the most amazing for him, which obviously mm-hmm. like she had checked in with him if that was okay and stuff, and getting off in the way that felt good for her. And similarly, in my casual sex hookups and stuff, I've often found it really nice if someone seems to have an interest in getting me off but like doesn't really know how to do it, I'll mm-hmm. often ask them to finger fuck me because like while I use a vibrator on my clit. Because I feel like that's, like, fairly easy to do as long as you don't have, like, you know, hand strength issues or what have you. In which mm-hmm. case, a sex toy is good for that also. And it makes them feel maybe, like, more connected to me than using a sex toy mm-hmm. would. Because, like, I know that, you know, I don't really feel like doing education with random hookups about, like, sex right. toys will not replace you or whatever. So they feel connected. I get to instruct them a little bit. And they feel competent. Mm-hmm. They feel like they're contributing to my orgasm. And also, a lot of guys are actually, like, really enthused about being told specifically how to get off a woman because a lot of them have sort of anxiety about whether or not they can get women off but, like, don't really have the confidence to, like, ask how to do it, especially mm-hmm. in a hookup scenario where, like, you don't know if this person's going to laugh you out of the room if you ask that question, you know? Mm-hmm. And so that's been really good for me, and it's also a really efficient way for me to get off. So, like, I don't have to stress so much about, like, God, I'm taking forever while he's going down on me because he doesn't know how to go down on me because he's never gone down on me before. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, so I really enjoy that.
Yeah, no, I think that makes a lot of sense. I think for me, if I'm having a casual hookup, part of what's fun about it is, like, the novelty and the little bit of uncertainty, that little bit of, like, well, I don't know what they're going to finger me like because they've never fingered me before, right?
Yeah.
So I think things that around that, A, filming it is a thing that, like, honestly, probably equally fun regardless, but it does kind of add to that special novelty in the same way I really enjoy filming myself having sex in weird and interesting places. Mm-hmm. Adding a camera to a hookup with someone new is, I don't know, another version of that kind of memento, that kind of sexy scrapbook that I am building online or whatever that looks like, right? Mm-hmm. So that can be extra fun. And it also adds this element of performance. So it doesn't necessarily have to be a camera. It could even be having sex in a public place or in front of a crowd at a play party, whatever. Mm-hmm. Because when I'm playing with someone new, that takes a little bit of the focus off of like just us and allows me to like also enjoy being watched and kind of showing off and all of these other things that are also hot to me and are hot to me pretty much regardless. So I think it takes a little bit of the pressure off of the sex itself to be the most hot, you know?
Yeah. And am I right in assuming that you're talking about getting together with other porn performers with the explicit intention that you're going to make porn?
Yeah. And this is, I mean, generally I do tend to work with other sex workers, mostly because of the anxiety stuff we were talking about earlier. It's so much easier because there are like a process you can follow. Like, there is kind of a weird line between, like, I do want to be somewhat flirty and, like, fun and chatty with this person because it's a person who I'm going to presumably enjoy having sex with. And there are the things that you want to talk about. And I did actually, this is one of the other things I did want to touch on because I feel like there are a lot of people who have started making porn even just for fun these days, and are having those hookups and saying, hey, can I pull out my camera and just like film me and your dick for OnlyFans? Your face isn't in it, whatever. And there are like still certainly things you want to keep in mind. Like, you do want to make sure you're taking one or two copies of that person's ID, depending on which sites you're planning on sharing it on. You do want to make sure they're still signing a model release, even if their face isn't on the camera, right? Even if you're like, oh, I'll probably see this person like some other time, whatever. Have them signed the things before you start filming because you need to keep them on file. There have been some interesting law, there was an interesting precedent set around 2257s. I don't remember the specifics, so I'm not going to talk out of my ass. But if you look at if you go to APAGUnion.com, that's the Adult Performers and Actors Guild Union. Adult Performance Artists Guild Union. There we go.
Okay.
So they have a ton of information about what you need for your 2257 paperwork and your IDs and all of that. Just make sure your legal shit is in order if you are going to be doing that. Things are really complicated enough getting naked on the internet. Make sure you dot your T's and wait, dot your I's, cross your T's. Don't do it the other way around, though.
Yep.
Anyway, I think we had some really great listener questions too, right?
We did. Yes. One person asked, tips for navigating picking someone up in a bar as a trans guy always feels hard.
Mm-hmm. So the first thing that came to mind is totally unrelated, but it is a story from an erotica anthology called Nerve Endings. Written by Rocket, and it is my favorite story in that anthology because it opens with a trans guy who saw a hot bartender at a bar, and the, you know, hot bartender came over and was cruising him, and the trans guy sprinted out the front door, exactly as I would do. and the whole opening of the story is him home jerking off, thinking about what could have happened. And then the second half of the story, he goes back and those things do happen quite well. But I think all of that is to say it's a great story and you should read it. And it reminded me of this particular scenario. But I think for me, what is most helpful is to disclose my transness outside of the context of them fucking me. Like, I can mention that I'm trans and propose that we hook up at very different sentences in very different parts of the conversation. I would mention my transness similarly to how I mention my polyamory or my partner or like the fact that I do porn or any other thing that is just true to me and might be a deal breaker for some people. I don't sit down and disclose it like it is a big, serious conversation that we need to have. Mm-hmm. I casually mention back when I got my tits cut off, blah, blah, blah. Or, you know, like you say, you know, oh, when I was a little girl, I used to. And they go, what? And you go, don't worry about it. But like you can find, you can have your phrases that you fall back on, those ways that you casually drop it, and you can make sure it registers, right? You can have the, you don't do the don't worry about it. You go, oh, I'm trans. I don't know if you know, blah, blah, blah. And then keep moving on, right? Mm-hmm. You don't have to sit there and wait for them to have a reaction, because then you're going to set them up to feel like they have to have a reaction. And cis people mm-hmm. never know what to fill that space with. So just let the knowledge be out there. And then later on, if you're choosing, if you're wanting to like try and hook up with them, propose that. And mm-hmm. they may decline because you're trans. They may decline for an entirely different reason. Hopefully, if they're not an asshole, they're not going to say, no, I don't fuck trans guys. If they do, I promise you, you didn't want to fuck them anyway. I know it doesn't feel like it, but I fucking promise. But otherwise, they may just say no. And that's their prerogative. There are any number of reasons why they would do that. But mm-hmm. yeah, I would tend to separate them. I would tend to not make it big and heavy. Just make it another piece of information about you.
Yep. I think that's all great advice. I often feel like, even though it's not the same thing at all, there are parallels between your experience of like disclosing being trans and my experience of disclosing having a chronic illness and chronic pain and mm-hmm. an invisible disability and stuff. It's really a very separate thing, but mm-hmm. I get similarly like nervous about it. It's not like I'm going to face, you know, violence or whatever as a result of disclosing that the way trans people often do. But
I imagine someone hitting you as a response to saying you have chronic pain. I'm
sorry.
Just the rationale of, I'll make it worse. Anyway.
Yeah. It's a very weird move. But I do feel, I think, nervous about disclosing it a lot of the time. And I often like to do it exactly as you've just described, which is mentioning it casually in a story that seems innocuous and unrelated. Mm-hmm. But I will find a way, right? Because mm-hmm. you just want to get those people out of the way, the people who are not going to be into it, the people mm-hmm. who are like, ew, gross. You want them to leave. You want them to make an excuse and go and leave. Like, you do yeah. not want them to stick around and keep talking to you. You really don't.
Yeah. And it's not hard for me to fit it into conversation. Like, I know the way we're saying this. We're like, I don't know, we squeeze it in and shoehorn it in somewhere. These are both things that come up every single day of our lives. Like, you exactly. encounter chronic pain daily. I'm trans every fucking day. So, like, there is a reason for me to mention it. A thing, something will be relevant. There's a way to fit it in if I've been talking to this person for any length of time. Mm-hmm. And as much as I hate quoting Dan Savage, their reaction tells you more about them than it does about you.
Yep, absolutely. Another listener asked, how do you approach getting kinky with a one-night stand? If you're talking about people who are new to kink, I would recommend the advice previously given about mm-hmm. educating them. 1 to 10 pain scale is really useful. But probably you're talking about hooking up with other people who either are or are likely to be kinky. And so, Bex, what's your advice for that?
Yeah, I think, well, first of all, if a person is kinky, negotiation becomes a little bit a part of our flirting, right? I tend to, yeah. It is not long into a conversation with a fellow kinkster, especially if we're meeting at a kink event or in that environment where we're talking about, oh, what kind of things do you do? What other scenes have you had this weekend? What kind of play do you enjoy? Mm-hmm. So presumably if I'm at a part where I'm deciding I want to play with someone, I have a little bit of that in my back pocket. I've also showed up to the party with some information about myself. You want to reflect on which kinks are the ones that are easy for one-night stands, which are the ones that you don't necessarily need to play particularly heavy with, that you don't feel like you need to super vet someone's skills, right? If you're a rope bottom, maybe your decision is for the first time you play with someone, you stay grounded, you do floor work, and suspensions are for someone you feel more comfortable with, right? If you are a person who is like into needle play, maybe that's not a thing you do with someone who you just met. Maybe you do other kinds of sadism, like, you know, you get beatings or whatever, right? You are going to need to reflect on your own safety profile and what you feel comfortable with. But I recommend doing that before you are at a place where you are hooking up, because your judgment is going to be compromised when there is a hot person in front of you, I promise. particularly if there's some sort of power dynamic happening here, right? If you are subby and you are playing with a hot dominant and you are negotiating a scene, you can tell yourself you're out of role, but they are a hot dominant standing in front of you. You want to do what they say. That's part of why you're doing what you're doing. That's part of why this they're a fun person to play with, because they're someone you want to listen to. So if you have this information that you figured out separately, you can bring that into the scenario and say, well, these are the things I'm thinking about playing with new people for. And you've probably also given yourself some language, right? I'm a person who likes impact, and I really like thuddy impact with a really playful kind of energy around it. And you can kind of build a scene together there. I do tend to frame my negotiation, at least at the very beginning of the situation, by saying, these are the things I like, versus like, I'd really love you to do this to me, because that's setting up a really particular scenario. I'd rather list, these are three or four things I enjoy, and see what the other person bites on, and keep building from there. If you are going to do, I mean, I recommend vetting anyone you play with if you can, but particularly if you are doing kinky things and you have access to this, if you're at an event or something, maybe talk to someone else they've played with, maybe see them do a scene with someone else, right, over the course of a weekend. That's easy to do. But if not, have an idea of what kind of questions you like to ask around the kink you enjoy. For me, I tend to err on the side of open-ended questions. Rather than, you know, if I'm setting up a fireplace scene, I don't go, hi, do you have a fire blanket and fire extinguisher? I say, what safety things have you brought to take care of me during this scene? And have them talk me through their kit. And if, because if I say, hey, do you have a fire extinguisher? They can go, yes, of course I thought of that. Sure. There's one right over on the other side of the room. Let me go grab it, you know? I don't want to give them the answers. I want to hear the way they think about my safety, the way they think about the scene that we are going to have, the way they describe their gear to me, right? If they're holding up something and I'm like, oh, look at that little baby newbie paddle. And they're like, so this guy's brutal. I'm like, okay. So we are playing on different levels. Cute. Right? So the way you let people tell you who they are and the way they seem, and allow all of that to be part of your vetting. If I'm vetting someone for something I know less about, like fireplay is an awful example because I would not do fireplay with someone I don't know. But I've never done fireplay before, and there's this great person who says they're going to teach me how to do it. They're also a rope top, though, and I've done a fuck ton of rope. I will talk to them about rope for a little while. How do they talk about their rope skills? Are their perceptions of what is safe to do in rope similar to my perceptions of what is safe to do in rope? Do they have a similar judgment around safety? That may be the closest I can get to vetting them on this other thing that I don't know a ton about, right? So it's not a perfect scenario, but sometimes I will lean a little bit more on, well, here's a thing we both know about. Are we similarly calibrated around those things? Do you think about this part of kink similarly to how I do? Well, then I can maybe extrapolate and trust your judgment a little wider on other things. And if I pair that with being vetted by someone that I've played with or a teacher that I trust and be like, oh, you're mutual friends, and I talk to them and they're like, yeah, they're a great person to play with. Well, okay, and I piece that together with this other thing, you know? You can build an understanding of a person relatively quickly just by asking interesting questions and giving them the time to tell on themselves.
Yep. Great advice. I will only add that I think it can be slightly more difficult to bring up kink when you have met in an environment that is not explicitly kinky, like, say, Tinder. In which case,
No, see, because I just wind up in the, like, same way I do with transness. I'm always just like, oh, yeah, I'm, you know, attending this kink workshop later today, or I'm doing this, but it's too easy for me.
Right. Like, well, this. Exactly. Yeah, I wanted to just offer a little bit of advice for how to kind of dig into that question. I usually like to wear pins on my jacket or patches on my bag or whatever, which, you know, of course, not everybody is going to notice, but they are there. And another thing is when someone asks you, like, how's your day been or what have you been up to lately or whatever? I mean, I tend to – I'm always, like, caught off guard by that question, even though everybody asks that. But if you actually, like, think about that and prepare a little bit in advance, you can say something that, like – maybe is true or maybe is, like, sort of true. Like, oh, I don't know, I was reading this book about spanking earlier, you know, amongst a list of maybe a few other things that you did today or whatever. Mm-hmm. Or you can say, I was listening to this sex podcast that I love called The Dildorks because it's so brilliant and great and the hosts are so smart and cute.
Mm-hmm. And then drop a link just in case they want to listen. Favorite episode.
Yeah. Ever. Yeah, I really like to mention that when I'm talking about my day or my week or whatever, and maybe hide it, not hide it, but like put list it amongst one or two other things, because if the person is kinky, they will quickly reveal that to you by being like, oh, tell me more about that podcast.
Or if they're weird, they will quickly reveal
it. Right. It's true.
Like if they're going to be gross about it, they will also take that opportunity.
Yeah, and that's a really easy way to do that, I think.
Yeah, I use this podcast for that all the time.
Yeah.
Oh, another thing you could – I've even, like, when watching media or something, like, if we're watching a movie or a show together or whatever, been like, that's kinky, though. That's – I don't – because television does that often enough. I mean, I was just watching, like, old school Star Trek, which is just fetish porn sometimes. But there are so many things that you could be like – That's a kink. When did the show get kinky, right? And see if they also pick up on those things, because it can be played off as a joke, or they can be like, "What?" And you're like, "Well, these power exchange, blah blah blah." It's a great conversation starter.
Yep.
Or I'm a pervert. Either way, it's fun.
Yep. All right, that's it for this week. I have been Kate Sloan. I have a sex blog at girlyjuice.net. I have a book coming out, which you can pre-order at 101kinkythings.com. I also was kicked off PayPal this week, which has happened to me before, and is a really common problem for people working in the sex industry. So if you want to support me without resorting to PayPal, I write a weekly newsletter at katesloan.substack.com, which is full of really good, I think, intimate writing about sex and relationships. And subscribers to that newsletter really, really help me out when sexphobic bullshit like this happens. So I would love that. Where's your stuff?
I'm Bex. You can find my writing and information about my workshops at BexTalkSex.com, and I'm on Twitter and Instagram at BexTalkSex. I'm also very naked on the internet as Billy Lore. You can find me at Billy Lore on Twitter, Just for Fans, and many vids. You can also go to patreon.com/thedildarks to throw a couple of bucks at us and help us keep doing what we're doing.
Thank you so much to Protodome, who lets us use his song I Want You in My Bedroom as our theme song. His music is at protodome.bandcamp.com. Thank you to Amy, who did our logo. She is at starboots_ on Twitter. And thank you to you for listening. Until next time, folks, get out there and live your sexy, dorky life.
Bye.